you are listening to TCM Talkback.
Mark Bertrand, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Melissa.
Well, I am here with Mark Bertrand, and we are talking about the latest book in the Roland March series, Nothing to Hide. And this is the third book in the series, so tell us a little bit about the series, and then more specifically, this book in particular.
Well, all of the books are about Roland March, who's a Houston homicide detective, and they follow different phases in his career. In the first book, Back on Murder, he is really kind of a little bit disgraced. He's not at the top of his game. He's on his way out of the department. But the events in that book turn everything around. He gets a hold of a big case and really changes the path of his career. In the second book, Pattern of Wounds, involved in this really complicated serial killing spree that connects back to an old case of his and really has to confront some demons of his past. Most recent book, Nothing to Hide, you actually see March unusually in a good place to begin with. He's actually the senior guy on his homicide squad, and he's respected once more. But, of course, this being one of my books, that's all about the change.
That is true. Now, one of the best parts of this series has been watching Roland walk through the crime-solving process and being able to experience some of the frustrations and then the dead ends that law enforcement officers have to deal with. Talk about this part of the writing process, and what steps do you take to ensure that the crime-solving part feels authentic? And then, as part of that, what's the most difficult part of
sure.
making it authentic?
When you talk to law enforcement officers, the people that really do this kind of work, they always express a lot of frustration about something they call the CSI effect, which is the way that the science of forensics and crime solving is great in media. So what I wanted to do in this series was be much closer to the reality of the process, to really play up the human element, and also to highlight the shortcomings and the limits of the science. And because the books are set in Houston, I had some wonderful opportunities to do that, because in real life, the Houston crime lab has just been plagued with all sorts of problems. The DNA section was shut down. They've even had trouble with fingerprinting. And you see all of this in the books. These are real controversies that are also part of March's difficulties in solving crimes. The other thing, I don't know about you, but I hate the fact that in so many detective stories, whenever the lead detective has a hunch or makes some unlikely connection, he's always right.
Yes.
And that's just not the way it works. And so I March the freedom to be wrong sometimes. And so you'll see him go off in directions where he's just convinced that he's onto something, and he's not. And that's part of the process as well. But probably the biggest thing for me in terms of the authenticity is that I'm writing about people whose job puts them in touch with evil on a daily basis. And there's a corrosive effect to being exposed to these things, to witnessing the kind of things that March sees. And that has to take its toll on his character. You know, so often the human component of the suffering that's witnessed, I feel like, doesn't come through in crime fiction. And so that was one thing I really wanted to get right, to capture just the sense of the toll that this kind of work takes on a person who started off as an idealist.
Yeah, and Roland has really been one of those characters that have evolved throughout the series. It's almost like watching him grow up, so to speak. And, you know, I didn't hit it off real well with him in Back on Murder, but by the time I got to this book, I really liked his character. I really liked him. And so talk about how his character has evolved, and what are some of the key moments in his development, and how he surprised you?
Well, one of the things when I first started writing Back on Murder that I wanted to do was write about a character who was not like a textbook hero. Now, there are certain formulas. There are certain ways that, that a writer can get readers on the side of his hero early on. And I took some risks in Back on Murder by showing March doing things that, that readers wouldn't really sympathize with or understand. Things that were realistic, things that, that you know were true to his character, but made him not necessarily likable. And the reason I did this is that some of my favorite characters in fiction have been these kind of complicated people who aren't perfect, who aren't always heroic, but their humanity speaks to me. So I was pleased when I saw the reactions that March was getting, because there were people who read him despite the way he was, but there were also readers who deeply, deeply identified with him, who could really themselves and their struggles reflected in the kind of things that March goes through. So he starts off in the first book in the series in that really sort of shaky territory. And although over time, through the course of the books, he does become more firmly grounded in his work, his relationships firm up a little bit, he gets some stability in life, there are these challenges that he faces that are always threatening to bring the whole House of Cards toppling down. And March is a man who's deep existential, who's really puzzled by these big, we might say philosophical questions, but to be honest, the theological questions that, that he's often preoccupied with concerning the nature of evil, in Nothing to Hide, also the nature of heroism, what it means to be brave as opposed to being foolish is a big factor in his development. So he's on a different kind of journey than a lot of heroes in fiction, but I'm pleased I had the freedom to tell this kind of story.
Yes, and one of the things that you were talking about in his development and his character development and his relationship, I really liked watching the relationship develop with his wife. That came, you know, almost full circle from a very distant, strained relationship to one in which I wouldn't say that he's opening up and spilling his life to her, but it's still watching that relationship develop. And even the one with the Robs, that has really come a long ways. And watching all the characters grow, there's really been fun. It, not just Rowling's character, but all the characters grow in this series has been just really a lot of fun. And so I'm curious, are you happy with the end result? Do you think that it turned out the way that you thought it would at the beginning, or is it somewhat different than what you originally thought about?
That's a good question. It's hard to see, you know, how much of this you plan and how much sort of you discover the process of the work. And I absolutely, when I started Back on Murder and I introduced some of these recurring characters that appear in all of the novels, I had plans for them. But as I went, those plans changed, and I figured out more about the journey that these characters are on. You mentioned the Robs, Carter Robb and his wife Gina. They start off in Back on Murder in one kind of a situation in life where she's teaching at a suburban school and he's a youth pastor. Big mega church out in the burbs, and you see in the books their life taking different turns. In the second book, they're actually living in the garage apartment that March and his wife Charlotte have at their house, and they've moved out the third book, and Carter is working with this outreach center and is struggling a little bit with his new calling, and of course they're having a child. So as those relationships, as they've progressed on their journey, we're always seeing them through March's eyes, you know, because the books are written entirely from his perspective. So the challenge for me is always how to tell the story of other characters, but always through his perspective. So what I'm trying to do is communicate the growth of these characters, but sometimes the way that they've grown is something March himself doesn't perceive. So the reader picks up on clues that maybe March doesn't necessarily appreciate. because Mark is a guy who's pretty self-involved and doesn't always pick up on what's going on in the world around him. Ironically, a detective.
Right. Yeah, that is kind of, I hadn't really thought about that, but you're right. To be a detective, it is ironic that he does seem to have a narrow focus and whenever he's walking through life. I hadn't thought about that, but you're right.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about, you include in this book some great quotes and elements from classic literature. And like, for example, Dante's Inferno and Song of Roland. Where does including the classics fit into your writing process?
Well, with this book, very early on, I had conceived of the structure of the book in relation to Dante. I'd been reading, I think it was Julian Simon's book on Dante, and it struck me, this was the structure. You know, in the Divine Comedy, Dante is actually a character in his own book, and he's led from the Inferno through Purgatory and into Paradise. And I flip that over. You know, I reverse the order so that March starts off in part one of the book in a kind of paradise, goes through a limbo period, and then ends up in the Inferno. He ends up with everything going wrong, and he's on his own. And that was really right there at the conception of the book. Now, all of the books have these little things going on. There are references in the books to other stories and literature. There's a lot of play underneath the surface, but with this book, it's very front and center. You know, the section titles refer pretty directly to Dante. There are quotes from the Divine Comedy as well as some other works that orient the reader a little bit to this. There are guides, just like Dante is guided by Virgil and by Beatrice or Beatrice through the Inferno and through Paradise. March also has guides who are pretty clear references to the characters in Dante. And then there are other things that are a little more going on. The Song of Roland, obviously, his name is Roland March, and that's a reference that has always... I've always associated him with that story, and the Song of Roland is just a great story of chivalry gone wrong, or you've got a brave knight who just won't help and tragedy results, and it seems to me like that is a wonderful metaphor for the kind of man that March has become.
Right.
And so
I love it. With Gina, by the way, on the Song of Roland. I love that discussion, that exchange that those two went through, because exactly what I thought was, Roland, I could see him, I could see why they're on opposing ends, because that fits him so well. Yeah,
right. And it's fascinating to me that if you think about Roland, the chivalric hero, people do have really divided opinions about him. We kind of think of him as a hero because that's the way that originally he was conceived. But when you look at his actions, they don't always make sense. And so there's actually a quote in the final section from a Graham Greene novel where one of Graham Greene's characters is berating Roland for his stupidity and his pride that it doesn't let him blow the horn and ask for help. And again, I mean, if there's anybody too proud to ask for help, it's Roland March. So it's a pretty good overlay, I think.
Yeah, I thought it was great. I loved it. Is it something that when you started writing the series or this book that the Song of Roland was in your mind, or is it something that as the story or the series developed that it kind of popped into your mind? Where did those all kind of fit in at?
Well, I was thinking through the Dante connections and thinking about how that structure would tell this story. And as I was working on that, it occurred to me that there was something the Roland could do as well. And I decided that this was going to be the book where I really made those connections obvious and brought the literary aspect right up to the surface. And in doing that, you know, it felt a little risky. You know, was I being too obvious? But the way it turned out really pleased me. So I was happy that everything came together like it did.
Yeah, it turned out great. I really enjoyed it. Now, Nothing to Hide has some real-life elements to it as well. Talk
right.
about some of the events that some of the real-life events that you kind of fictionalized
sure.
or included in here, and what first led you to include them in this story?
Well, what first led me to do it, I wanted, you know, with each of the stories, I've wanted to do a certain type, a certain subgenre, and with this one, I really wanted to do a paranoid kind of political thriller, sort of like those great movies of the 70s and 80s, like the 3 Days of the Condor, that kind of thing. But how do you connect a Houston homicide detective with the world of spies and international intrigue plausibly? And I actually remembered that a few years back, and this was one of the real incidents that I guess was the spark for this, that there was a man who was pulled over by the Houston Police Department who claimed to be a CIA agent, and during the course of this traffic stop drew a gun and was actually shot by police officers, shot and killed. And afterwards, it turned out he had been the head of the local retired intelligence agent club, and at the same time, the government denied having any knowledge of him. And so at the time, there were articles written about this and even some conspiracy theories cooking online, and that was exactly the sort of thing that gets my mind working, you know. And so I started thinking about that and how I could connect an incident loosely inspired by that real-life event to a March story. And at the same time, as I was researching, I came across the Justice Department's report on Operation Gunrunner, which was an ATF operation that involved essentially, we think of it now as trading guns to the Mexican cartels, but it seemed to me at the time that it was more about trying to implicate American gun dealers in the arms trade and that sort of thing. And the Justice Department had been very critical of this, so I did some reading on it, and I came up with a plot inspired by that involves, again, a government agency transporting arms to the cartels south of the border. And to be honest, when I turned the manuscript in, I worried that people would read this and think it was implausible that no government agency would do this sort of thing. And then, of course, the whole Fast and Furious scandal erupted, and if anything, I had undersold the willingness of government agencies to operate in those gray areas. I'm very happy to say that when it comes to the morality of selling automatic weapons to the drug cartels, March is not nearly so ambiguous as some seem to have been.
Yes, it is always interesting to hear how, you know, research, when an author's researching something and how something that may be minor or, you know, just a little aspect of it. Robert Liparulo's, I believe it was Deadlock, was similar to that, and that it dealt with, I'm drawing a blank on it, but it was kind of loosely researched, and then the outcome of actual events were much worse than the fictional story. And I'm drawing a blank on the details. It's been
Well, I am not at all a rip from the headlines kind of writer, but in this case, the headlines kind of anticipated me, and it's just one of those life imitating art situations that you never expect, but they do happen.
Yes, it is very cool whenever it does. I mean, well, I say very cool. It's very interesting whenever it happens, but to know that some of the things our government does is not so cool.
Sure, sure.
Not as cool. Well, it seemed like when the story ended that the series might be over. I mean, the ending Nothing to Hide leaves it open enough that there might be other books, but it kind of seems like it's coming to an end. What have you liked most about this series, and, you know, what is, you know, now looking back over it, what's been kind of the biggest surprise throughout the series and the writing process and all of that?
It is, it's kind of in the sense that when I originally contracted the books, I signed a contract to do three of these books, but I wrote them as a series, and I always intended to leave it open-ended because, you know, my hope is to come back to March as a character at some point in the future. But for now, we've got three episodes in his adventures. And, I would say that the thing that pleases me the most about what I've done in these books is it seemed to me a really challenging thing to write a guy who's essentially an unsympathetic character and yet bring readers along. It's been my experience that when people get a hold of these books, they find them just compulsively, and they, whether they like March or not, they want to know what's happening, and they want to stay tuned in. And so that's really pleased me, because this is not the kind of story that's being told regularly. I mean, it's an unusual kind of character to be following, and I had no clue whether people would be interested or willing to follow him, and so the response has just been overwhelming. I think the thing that surprised me the most, just in the writing process, was how supple March's point of view turned out to be. Because when I wrote back on Murder and realized I'm writing this book entirely from March's point of view. It's all first person. He's telling the story, which means I can go into anybody else's. I can never, you know, leave March in one room while I follow the killer, you know, somewhere else, which is a really common device in crime thrillers to try to amp up tension. So when I started this, I really worried that I was tying one hand behind my back and as it turns out, though, the more I worked with it, the more freedom I felt using March's eyes through which to see. And I think it opened things up, and it added layers to the books that they wouldn't have if it had just been written in that sort of standard thriller style. So
right.
the more difficult style, although it was a challenge, absolutely, to maintain through the course of, you know, almost 1,000 pages worth of fiction.
Mm-hmm.
In the end, I really felt rewarded by it.
Okay. Well, this is going to be kind of a off-topic question real quick, but who is your favorite, or who are some of your favorite unheroic heroes in fiction?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, I think you could probably point to a lot of my favorite crime fiction authors. Their protagonists have at least, you know, some aspect of unheroism to them. One of my favorites, James Lee Burke's character, Dave Robichaud, I think fits the bill there, but just because of his tortured past and that kind of thing. There's one example I often give, though, of a guy who is so unsympathetic that I think he would make March seem like the most lovable person that you could take home to meet the parents and that sort of thing. And that would be Quinn's character, D.S. Brandt, in his White Trilogy and other novels. He's an Irish crime writer, and he really, I think, set out to write about a very unsympathetic guy and mm-hmm. does it with some real style. And so when I've been asked the question before, Brandt is always person that I bring up, because you're reading this thinking this can't be the guy I'm rooting for. It's a testament to Bruin's skill that he can pull something like that off. And what I've done, I think, pales in comparison to that. March is extraordinarily likable compared to Brandt. But I'll say that, you know, one of the things that, you know, if you sign up to go to a writer's conference and people tell you about character development and that sort of thing, there's a lot of emphasis on the likability of characters, that you really need to make them sympathetic, that they need to be sympathetic early on. And that was a real concern for my editors at the beginning of Back on Murder, that March was doing things that they were concerned readers would not find sympathetic or heroic. So to be unheroic or to be a hero in that context isn't the same as being a villain. It's just that you're not writing about a person who's better than real people.
Right.
You know? And so I would say about March, he's no more unlikable than the average person. It's just being in fiction about people who are a lot better than the average person, who
right.
don't have the same kinds of flaws, who make the right choices and that sort of thing, except, you know, for notable exceptions. So it's more to do with the way that heroes in fiction tend to be stylized
mm-hmm.
than March's unlikability as a person, as opposed to just a character, if that makes sense.
Yes, and actually I think that's a very good point, because so many times, I think as a reader at least, there are certain aspects of a character, like you talked about, having some sort of sympathy for the hero. I mean, I like flawed heroes. In fact, they're my favorites. I absolutely love the flawed heroes. But I have to have a reason to sympathize with their flaws. I have to be able to accept their flaws and say, okay, this is a building block and makes them a stronger character. And as this series progressed, I saw that in Roland. I mean, I saw his flaws as actually his greatest strengths by the time it was all said and done, which was very strange, because whenever I started, and it was fun. I mean, I loved it. I love it whenever my perception of a character will change that dramatically through a course of books or series, because it was always his bending the rules in the gray areas that I wanted him to stay out of. But in the end, that's his strength. It's his strength of knowing when to step out of line and when to play by the rules. And so it was fun. It was a lot of fun to watch him evolve.
Yeah. That's, you know, there's a line at the end of the movie, The Winslow Boy, mm-hmm. that has always stuck with me, where the lawyer character, it's very easy to do justice and very hard to do right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a dilemma March could identify with greatly, because he's interested just instinctively in doing right.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a conflict sometimes, because the letter of the law
mm-hmm.
presents limitations to that, you know,
and
so he struggles with it. He's not a callous rule bender. He's
right.
He's a guy who flirted with the idea, who isn't as bad as people think. You know, his colleagues believe that he's worse than he is, but you know, he does have his reasons. And yes, especially in the first book, I intentionally held some of those reasons back till very late in the book, so that you see him doing things that you don't realize until later make a kind of sense. You know, you encounter him in the parking lot of this bar, and he's accosting this woman in a kind of vicious way. But then in hindsight, you realize she's about to drive drunk, and he's angry about that for reasons of personal history. And so it gives you some context, but you don't get that for quite a while.
Right.
It's like his new partner, Teresa Cavallo, in the first book, she's got no clue why he acts the way he does, and ends
right.
up finding out by reading a true crime book written about March's history, and not from him, because this is not something he talks about at all.
Right. Yeah, it's fun. He's been a fun character. So what's next for you?
Well, I'm working on a lot of things, crime fiction really is my bailiwick. It's the thing that allows me to explore the themes that fascinate me. So right now I don't want to say too much, but I'm working on something that's very much in the spirit of the March books, but with different characters. And my hope is that you know, in a few years, I'll come back to March and add a few more books to this series. But I have a few other creative itches to scratch as well. March, you know, this has been detective fiction, and there are other kind of crime stories that are driven by the investigation that are fascinating to me as well. So probably more in the area of the literary crime thriller, but not following a detective so much as other people involved in the case.
When can we expect those books to be published?
Good question. Hopefully sooner rather than later. We'll see.
Okay. Where can our listeners find out more about you and your books?
Well, a great place to go would be to my website, which is jmarkbertrand.com. And there you'll find information about all the books in the series. You'll also find online the original ending for the second book, Pattern of Wounds, versus the ending that it was printed with. There's also a kind of interesting thing, an excerpt from the true crime book that I mentioned just now, which is called The Kingwood Killing. There's a character in the series who is a crime writer, and so in order to write March's novels, I had to come up with the story for this crime writer. And so I wrote about 30 pages worth of that, and you can find that online and some other extras as well. Pretty much everything about the series that you could ever hope to know is there at jmarkbertrand.com.
Okay, cool. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It has been great talking to you. I'm looking forward to one day picking up with March again, but, hey, the stuff that you've got going sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun too. So kind of torn on that one. Well, Well, look forward, though, definitely to your next crime books and maybe see March again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot for having me.
Thank you.